From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders has announced he is running for president. In an email sent to his supporters on Tuesday, he wrote, 3 years ago, during our 2016 campaign, when we brought forth our progressive agenda, we were told that our ideas were radical and extreme. He added, well, 3 years have come and gone, and as a result of millions of Americans standing up and fighting back, all of these policies and more are now supported by a majority of Americans. Sanders joins a large pool of Democratic contenders for 2020, many of whom are now echoing parts of his 2016 platform. Within the first 24 hours of announcing his candidacy, he raised about $6 million in small donations from more than 200,000 supporters, far more than his Democratic colleagues. My guest is Norman Solomon. He was a pledged delegate for Bernie Sanders at the 2016 Democratic National Convention. He's also a co-founder of RootsAction.org. Welcome to the program, Norman.
Thanks, Sonali.
Well, I remember speaking to you at the DNC in Philadelphia in the summer of 2016 when you were helping to organize and poll the Bernie delegates, and you had helped to put together the Bernie delegates network. And then, of course, you know, people expected that he wouldn't be the nominee. It was known before that. But there was a good fight that was put up. And here we are, nearly three years later. What led up to his announcement on Tuesday? I know that for weeks, maybe months, people like yourself and others were hoping that he would make this announcement, and he kind of took his time.
He did. Well, of course, there's an infrastructure, there's a groundswell that's been sustained in support of him for several years now. And I think we could trace this way back to the Occupy movement at the beginning of this decade, where more and more, because of activism, the messages that Bernie Sanders, as an activist and then an elected official, has been calling forth for a long time have really resonated and become widespread. So the 1% versus the 99%, income inequality, what Bernie has been willing to say is the oligarchy that must be stopped, that really is part of, you might say, the zeitgeist that has really grown in the last few years. And so there's, so to speak, a popular demand that he run again, and I think it's terrific that he is running.
So some have mentioned that now his bigger challenge won't be competing against a centrist Democrat with far more name recognition. It will be competing with a whole bunch of people who are basically echoing his platform or versions of it or parts of it. You know, some have said that he's going to be competing against a whole bunch of Bernie clones or better versions of Bernie clones. And they point to his age and his race as challenges. You know, when you have somebody like, say, Kamala Harris or Elizabeth Warren or Tulsi Gabbard, who might be offering a similar platform, but with the added diversity factor in there, he, you know, is going to face competition. How do you respond to those critiques or, you know, just those points?
This is a media meme that we're getting from corporate media outlets like crazy. It's sort of like you have the real deal, the genuine, and then you have all these knockoffs that are coming along on the shelf saying, okay, no, we're just as good. In fact, Bernie doesn't blow with the wind. He's been part of creating the progressive wind. And we have a bunch of candidates who, for whatever reasons, in the last few months, in progressive political terms, so to speak, have gotten religion. So all of a sudden, in the last, since the 2016 election, you have several presidential contenders for the Democratic nomination who are talking about Medicare for all and free college tuition and so forth, to which I, and I think many progressives, say, well, better late than never. But if you blew this way because of the way that the political ambience seems to be to get the nomination, you could easily blow another way. So I think that helps to explain why, as you mentioned a couple of minutes ago, Bernie has gotten such a strong response since he announced he's running for president again. $6 million from small donors in a 24-hour period. That just is a bit of a barometer of just how much grassroots support he has. When you look at his opponents, I would roughly put them in three categories. You have Kamala Harris, for instance, who is being touted by the corporate media. And she has been relying on big donors. And more than that, she's someone who has had a lot of centrist positions sort of lacquered over with platitudes. She sounds a lot like, frankly, Barack Obama when he first ran for president, Bill Clinton when he first ran for president. It's formulaic. It is, working people aren't getting a fair shake. We need to sort of even the playing field. A buzzword is opportunity. There's not a commitment to fair outcomes. There's a commitment to ostensible fair opportunity, which is just the corporate capitalist game is good, and we just have to make sure the rules are enforced, which brings us to a roughly second category, Elizabeth Warren, who I think is far better than the other candidates, save Bernie, but she has a regulatory outlook. And again, when you go back and look at the record, she was a Republican until the 1990s, the middle of that decade. Well, people change, and she's changed for the better. She's done some great work in the last decade and a half or so. She still has a vision of a regulatory state. She has said, and I quote, "I'm a capitalist to my bones." Okay, that's perhaps a position that can be defended by some, but it's in a context of saying, I don't want to have a rigorous restructuring of how the entire economy is set up. I want to regulate corporate power. I don't want to end undue corporate power. I'm paraphrasing her now. She wants to change the rules of the road. Then you've got Bernie Sanders in his own lane, so to speak, who is systematically talking about unallowing, deconstructing, and then dismantling the oligarchy. And he's the only candidate, really, who's saying that, who can get the nomination.
So let's actually listen to what he had to say. He put out a lengthy video on his social media talking directly to his supporters about why it's important that he is running and essentially laying out his agenda. Here is Bernie Sanders.
Hi, I'm Bernie Sanders. I'm running for president. And I'm asking you today to be part of an unprecedented grassroots campaign of 1 million active volunteers in every state in our country. Our campaign is not only about defeating Donald Trump, the most dangerous president in modern American history. It is not only about winning the Democratic nomination and the general election. Our campaign is about transforming our country and creating a government based on the principles of economic, social, racial, and environmental justice. Our campaign is about taking on the powerful special interests that dominate our economic and political life. I'm talking about Wall Street, the health insurance companies, the drug companies, the fossil fuel industry, the military-industrial complex, the private prison industry, and the large multinational corporations that exert such an enormous influence over our lives.
And that's the first minute of a video that Sanders posted to his social media explaining why he was running. Norman, he was, in my opinion, said the magic words, this isn't just about defeating Trump, it's about transforming the country. And then he used the words economic, social, racial, and environmental justice. How important is this? Because other candidates, even if they have espoused support for things like Medicare for All, have still relied on that standard presidential campaign trope of doing, sharing their personal stories, you know, Elizabeth Warren's heritage and her working class roots and how she grew up and her father was a janitor. Sanders doesn't bother with any of that.
No, he doesn't bother with it, even though he actually grew up very poor as a child. One of the great changes, and I give credit to so many progressive activists who gave critical support to Bernie when he first ran for president, Bernie is now talking about what he calls, quite correctly, the prison industrial complex. He also now, in launching this new presidential campaign, is saying that he is opposed to the military-industrial complex.
So he learned lessons from his 2016 campaign. His 2 weak spots, or two of them, were the issue of racial justice, the issue of war. He was confronted by Black Lives Matter. He was confronted by people like yourself who wanted him to talk more about the U.S.'s warmongering.
Yes, and he more quickly was confronted by Black Lives Matter and other racial justice activists, and he shifted fairly quickly to the point that by the time the primary campaign in 2016 had ended, he was getting more support, according to polling, from young people of color, young African Americans, than Hillary Clinton was. And so he's been gearing up as a senator from Vermont, in this case needed to have a national perspective, much slower in terms of militarism. And at rootsaction.org, we reminded Bernie in a petition during the last campaign that Martin Luther King Jr. condemned what he called the madness of militarism, and that the corporate power that Bernie has so well denounced and opposed is entirely interlaced with the military contractors and U.S. imperial ambitions and activities around the world, including 800 military bases overseas. What's happened now is that Bernie has launched a new campaign that, consistent with his recent work, tremendous work to oppose U.S. participation in the Saudi bombing of Yemen, is a full-fledged denunciation of what he does call now the military-industrial complex, echoing President Eisenhower's farewell address. So I think this is tremendously encouraging. And if anything, I am more enthusiastic about Bernie 2020 than I was Bernie 2016. We should still be willing to be outspoken when we see things that are missing or that are amiss in the Bernie campaign. But this is a historic juncture. We are on the hinge of history where progressives have the initiative here. Not only, as you mentioned, fighting the right, the xenophobia, the racism, the horrific policies of the Trump administration, but also recognizing not only that the Democratic nominee is the only realistic instrument for removing a Republican from the foothold, the hold they have on the White House right now, but also that we're going to fight something not with hollow centrist, not a lot, nothing sort of thing from classic Democratic candidates, but we're going to fight the horrible right-wing policies and forces with something progressive, with something affirmative, with something that evokes in specific terms the kind of vision of a humanistic society that we really have.
So Sanders has the big advantage compared to his fellow Democrat, compared to his colleagues in the Democratic Party who are running now, in that he has that experience from 2016. But also his candidacy itself has spawned so much that we don't quite get enough of an acknowledgement in the mainstream media. The organizations and organizers that cut their teeth on the Sanders campaign have gone on to shift both the country and the Democratic Party leftward, right? We can thank the Sanders campaign for the rise of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, right?
There's no doubt she was an organizer activist for Bernie in 2016. A lot of the momentum, and not only numerically getting her and Rashida Tlaib, the congresswoman from Detroit, both of them avowed Democratic Socialists, into the House, but the energy is shifting from the grassroots and manifested with new members of Congress like that, who are saying, we're not going to just go along to get along with the old ways and mouth certain progressive ideas along the way. We're going to move this agenda. And that is part of the change at the grassroots, where there's more and more progress and momentum by progressive groups that are doing work inside and outside the electoral arenas. And I think it goes to a key point. Bernie's the only presidential candidate who comes out of progressive social movements. He's always been part of progressive movements for four plus decades of public life and before that. And you don't have any other contending Democrats for the nomination who that can be said about. So
you may not have any other member of Congress besides some of the newly elected ones that have that, right?
That is true. And so there are very few of them. You could count on maybe one or two hands in the entire Congress who come out of and relate to still as being part of social movements. And that's a almost unconscious, but certainly crucial distinction, whereas the classic politician view is that when I'm running for office, social movements are a subset of my campaign. Bernie, and quite properly, we should have the opposite view, that political electoral campaigns, important as they are subsets of social movements, progressive movements from the base, which are the only way that we can really get substantial change in policy.
Let's talk about Sanders's socialism and the fact that he has unabashedly identified for years as a democratic socialist. It seems as though those democratic contenders such as Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren are worried about being seen in that same vein because they seem to right away, so early in the race, be reacting to the demagoguery from the GOP and the Trump administration. If you just examine what Trump and the GOP has been saying, especially Trump in his last two major speeches, the State of the Union address, the speech he gave on Venezuela, he is taking aim at the idea of socialism as antithetical to freedom and democracy, and essentially trying to lay the groundwork for overtly saying Bernie Sanders will turn America into Venezuela, right?
Yes, there's a very overt effort from the right, and we can expect this from a lot of corporate centrist Democrats, I think more subtly, if that's the right term, to conflate, quote, socialism, unquote, with political repression. Whereas I think, especially polling shows that young people and more generally, most Democrats now are understanding that it's not an accurate conflation, that we ought to conflate corporate capitalism with poverty and militarism. That's an appropriate way to understand what goes together. And we've got to emphasize that when labor unions and the unemployed and the homeless of the time and those being evicted in the 1930s fought for and gained Social Security, that effort was condemned as quote unquote socialist or communist. In the 1960s, the effort to get passed in 1964 something called Medicare was widely condemned by the Barry Goldwater forces and some Democrats as, quote, socialist, unquote. If that's socialism, we need socialism. In fact, we do need what Bernie and others are calling democratic socialism, lowercase d. And that is our future. Otherwise, predatory economic relations, the further consolidation of capital and power, political and economic, under the wing of big Wall Street firms, the banking industry, the financial services industry, fossil fuel corporations. This will be the death of us literally and figuratively, as well as the planet in terms of climate. This is a huge wave. You know, usually, well, quite often, people on the left have seen, well, there's the option of electoral work or there's grassroots organizing. I think absolutely only doing electoral work or only doing grassroots organizing outside of electoral arenas, that would be a dead end. The synergy of both is tremendously powerful, and frankly, that's why corporate media and the right and the corporate Democrats and others are just going to be doing all sorts of vicious attacks on Bernie. It's already started. We should expect it, and we should be ready for it.
Right. I would like what you said about the idea of electoral politics needing to go hand in hand with grassroots movements. It has been too long that many on the left have written off electoral politics, probably from a sense of apathy, in the sense that, you know, it doesn't matter who's in Congress or the White House. And we found from Trump that it matters so deeply who's in the White House, that a Clinton White House would have been dramatically different from a Trump White House. Every day we see the train wreck that is, you know, that the White House is creating out of the Constitution and so many other things. And then we also have seen from the congressional elections last fall that even one or two or three or four newly elected members of Congress can make a difference, just culturally shifting the debate, as Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Ayanna Pressley and Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib have done, and hopefully in the next few months and years, actually leading to real legislation. So electoral politics cannot be dismissed, right? Let's talk briefly also about this idea that Bernie would be a spoiler. There have been some people who are like, I supported Sanders in 2016, but his time is past. He should just step aside. We cannot risk anything with Trump potentially taking the White House for a second time. He should step aside for the more electable candidates.
Yes, the conventional wisdom about what an electoral candidate, an electable candidate is, has a very poor track record. 3-4 years ago, we were being told that the electable candidate for president was absolutely Hillary Clinton. And in my own district, which voted more for Bernie Sanders than Hillary Clinton in the 2016 primary, the incumbent congressperson, Jared Huffman, refused to go along with what most people in his district did and actually cast his superdelegate vote, which won't exist in 2020, for Hillary Clinton. And the argument that came back from him and so many others was, oh, well, Hillary Clinton is the one who can beat Bernie Sanders, or rather, that Hillary Clinton can defeat Donald Trump. And we know what happened. And so the sort of conventional idea that you have this left-right spectrum, so you move to the right to defeat the right, really avoids the reality that if you close off left-wing progressive populism, the only avenue for the rage that many people feel about inequity is going to be open as a right-wing, xenophobic, horrific, bogus populism of the type that we're getting right now from the Trump administration. So all this conventional wisdom really doesn't boil down too well to having any sort of track record.
One of the things that have been raised in terms of the potential challenges that Sanders faces is this allegation that campaign staffers in his 2016 campaign, female campaign staffers, were the victims of sexual harassment, and he has spoken about it. He has apologized for it and said that he will deal with it in a much better way. There'll be safeguards put in place. Can you talk a little bit about that? How serious is this, and what do you make of his response?
The reality is that it's serious with virtually all large campaigns on the ground. And that's not in any way an excuse. It's not in any way a justification. It is an explanation. And the New York Times front-paged what went on with the Bernie Sanders campaign. It could have front-paged as well for other campaigns. We know where the media bias tends to be in terms of Bernie. But it's a major problem with political campaigns in general and our culture overall. And it needs to be fought and challenged more assertively. Bernie said he's going to do that. And it needs to happen.
So it was important for him to openly acknowledge it instead of getting defensive and address it head on, which is generally the best practice for candidates looking to run for office, right? I mean, I'm thinking of Elizabeth Warren and her disastrous DNA test and how it took her so long to acknowledge that that was a terrible mistake for her to do that. And so certainly this, you know, it's people want authenticity. They want you to acknowledge when you've made a mistake or when you've been part of something that's made a mistake and actually own it and move forward. That tends to play well among the American public, and other responses just tend to seem so manipulative.
I think that's right. The more people are spun, often the more resentful they are about the effort to be spun and to spin. I think also from the grassroots, we need to recognize that there are no saints among us, that even if they could really aspire to and could achieve the aspiration of complete sainthood, that it can't be done in the real world. And it's not to excuse anything. It's to say that we have not only flawed individuals, but flawed organizations and campaigns. We should strive to eliminate every flaw. But only in the picture books in Hollywood is there absolute perfection that gallops in on the the white horse, or if you prefer the black horse, and everything is fine and perfect. That's just not the real world.
You mentioned earlier the issue of superdelegates, and in the past couple of years, there have been changes made at the Democratic Party. Can you explain what exactly happened around that? Because many complained about the undemocratic nature of superdelegates who get to cast the votes after primary elections are completed. And we have such a patchwork set of how primary elections are even conducted in states around the country. Some states don't even have an elections, they have caucuses, and it gets very complicated. And then there was just a lot of blaming around superdelegates in the 2016 election. So what's happened in the past 2 years, and what impact could those changes have for 2020?
I think those changes have been insufficiently discussed in the media, including even in progressive media, because the terrain that this presidential campaign starts out on is quite different from 4 years ago. Back then, when the starting gun went off for the race, basically between Clinton and Sanders, already Clinton had more than half of the superdelegates, which in turn were about 1 out of 7 of all the delegates. And so you
imagine people who had just kind of declared their support for her publicly, that they would vote for her?
They were hot-wired in, declared publicly they would vote for her on the convention floor. They were mostly Democrats in Congress, other elected Democrats, some lobbyists. It was just a sort of a corruption that was tapped immediately by her. And so the crawls at the bottom of cable TV immediately said she was way ahead, which by the countable delegates she was. A lot of activism in RootsAction.org, Our Revolution, and other groups have been part of this in the last couple of years, has been aimed at the Democratic Party changing those rules. And last August at a DNC meeting in Chicago, the Democratic National Committee voted to eliminate all superdelegate votes on the first ballot for president. There hasn't been a second ballot since 1952. So this really changes the dynamic going on for as Iowa caucuses, as New Hampshire primary takes place and so forth. It's going to be a more level playing field. And that can only help Bernie Sanders, because it's not only that Hillary Clinton started out with all these delegates automatically, illegitimately. It's also that brought the front runner status. It brought more money. It got the sense of inevitability, which feeds on itself as a snowball. So this is a whole new avenue that we're in for this election. And again, I think a lot of times progressives can fall into, it's hopeless, we're going to lose, it's all rigged, we can't win. Of course, the Democratic Party is still very flawed. But that's true of the U.S. government, which has done horrific and continues to side with inequity, injustice, and perpetual war. We don't just throw up our hands and say, well, the U.S. government is bad, so we won't try to change it. This is the opportunity to make the changes. And as Antonio Gramsci, the great anti-fascist, said, we need pessimism of the intellect and optimism of the will. And I think the Bernie Sanders campaign for 2020 is exciting more and more people to have that optimism of the will and to get busy.
In 2016, you organized the delegates that were pledged to pledged delegates for Bernie Sanders. Tell me about the organizing that's happened around the Bernie Delegates Network, an organization of Bernie delegates, and what that means for 2020.
Yes, well, in the 2016 convention, we had 2/3 of those Bernie delegates in the Bernie Delegates Network. We functioned independently of the formal Sanders campaign. And then several months ago, we polled with one vote, one delegate, the people who were the Bernie delegates in 2016 and said, do you want to relaunch the Bernie Delegates Network for the year 2019? And we got this overwhelming yes vote, 95%. It was stunning. We had almost 500 of the delegates voting. So we have relaunched the Bernie Delegates Network. And when we stopped and thought about it, we realized that these were folks who were elected at the grassroots for the Bernie campaign to go to the convention in 2016. And they are, by definition, geographically dispersed and have real resonance and leadership records where they live. So throughout this year, the Bernie Delegates Network, again, independent of the Bernie campaign, will be mobilizing and working with those delegates and in coalition with many, many groups to have forums and activities to get out not only the vote, but before that, get out the dialogue, debate, and kinetic energy to defeat the corporate centrists who are really opposing the Bernie campaign.
So finally, Norman, 3 years ago, the corporate media were caught off guard when Sanders managed to win, you know, 40+% of the delegates. They were shocked that he had so much success. I mean, those who were involved in social movements knew Bernie's name very well, but maybe across the country, he wasn't yet a household name. And the corporate media kind of played along and didn't give him as much coverage as they should have. And then they were shocked by the success that he did enjoy. What do you hope is going to happen this time around? He has become, you know, he seems to be someone that the corporate media have taken more seriously in the past couple of years. He's often quoted in papers like the New York Times. Do you hope for better coverage, fairer coverage this time around?
Well, realistically, I don't expect fair coverage. I think the knives are already out. Bernie has denounced, for instance, Jeff Bezos, the richest man in the world, for the Amazon employment and predatory marketing practices. And the Washington Post is one of the many corporate media outlets that is overall, with some exceptions, very negative towards Bernie. And Jeff Bezos owns the Washington Post, as well as Whole Foods and Amazon and so forth. And that's, you know, a literal example, but also symbolic of the relationship between corporate media and the Bernie Sanders campaigns, plural now. So I don't expect it to get any better. If anything, because Bernie's campaign already has so much momentum, I think the onslaughts, the slings and arrows, the mud will be incoming just constantly. That means it's more important than ever for independent, progressive media to give voice to contrary views of the world and of this campaign. That is reality. And we understand, for instance, in 2016, this was symbolic. The Media Watch Group FAIR documented in 16 hours, the Washington Post published 16 negative articles about Bernie Sanders.
Wow.
That's the kind of thing we can expect from corporate media.
This was recent or?
Oh, this was during the Michigan primary in 2016. And it's just stunning to see the extent to which when push comes to shove and it's down to the wire, the corporate media will pile on to try to crush the Sanders campaign.
And incidentally, Sanders has not backed off or toned down his critique of Amazon. And it was his push for better wages at Amazon that pressured that retail giant to, at least on paper, offer their workers $15 an hour. So he certainly he doesn't back down, which is, of course, a big reason why his supporters are pretty loyal to him. Well, we'll see how things play out over the next couple of years. Norman, thank you so much for joining us. Give out any websites that you'd like for people to check out?
Yes, I'd invite people to sign up to get action alerts from rootsaction.org. We have 1.2 million active people in the U.S., part of the Roots Action Network. So if you want to be part of that, rootsaction.org is the way to get involved.
We'll link to that from our website later today, as well as to the article that you recently wrote about Sanders in Common Dreams. Thank you so much, Norman.
Thank you, Sonali.
Norman Solomon was a pledged delegate for Bernie Sanders at the 2016 Democratic National Convention, and he's the co-founder of RootsAction.org. We've been discussing Sanders' announcement of a 2020 presidential campaign. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.